Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
You know what, Open House, we've been following closely the current debate over religious freedom and the work of the Ruddock Inquiry. Heard the other day they're going to have some public hearings soon. They were supposed to report at the end of March, but clearly they've extended that and there'll be some public hearings. They won't be hurrying it. But it's important that they get it right. Respected Christian thinker and opinion maker and author Nick Spencer recently was in Australia as the guest of the Centre for Public Christianity. And he was here to deliver the 2018 Richard Johnson lecture, Where Did I Come From? Christianity, Secularism and the Individual. He's a research director of the Theos think tank in London and also a visiting research fellow at the University of London, a really important apologist, the author of numerous books and articles. But I spoke with him in particular about his interest in the argument that the Age of Enlightenment, the end of the Dark Ages, some people talk about that, the age where science and reason started to become part of where the world headed intellectually, that age heralded a great new age of science and secularism and effectively did away with the need for God. Some people say this was the point at which mankind proved we don't need God anymore because we can work it all out in our own heads. Nick argues that the progress of ideas was not so simple as some secularists or atheists have pointed out. And in fact, many of the factors that led to the preconditions for the Enlightenment, the growth of the Age of Reason, scientific method, and indeed our democratic system itself, many of those ideas, he says, came from Christianity.
The Enlightenment is an important period, although, again, it's not one thing, and it happens in different ways in different countries.
Okay, guess, of course.
But one of my core arguments is that, in actual fact, what you see in the 18th century is a drawing together of a lot of what social political historians call inclusive institutions, a lot of different, if you like, pieces of the jigsaw that pre-existed beforehand. So the Enlightenment is an important period, I would never deny that. But to imagine it some kind of ex nihilo, creation out of nothing, is, I think, historically misleading.
What did the Enlightenment then bring from Christendom?
Well, the most important date in the Enlightenment is actually 1688. It's just before the 18th century. And what happens then is the Glorious Revolution in England puts on the throne an accountable government, an accountable monarch, alongside parliamentary oversight of taxes, rule of law, common law, and a particular attitude to work and commerce and science, which meant that throughout the 18th century, through this political revolution, the scientific and then the industrial revolution come about, and that effectively gives birth to the modern world, and other nations copy that.
So there was a bed of social interaction and values that went along with it, upon which the greater scientific thinking of the Enlightenment could only improve, but certainly not replace. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, here's a little example for you. The Statute of Ordinances is a completely unknown piece yes. of English legislation. No one's ever heard of it for good reason. Now, what it does is it places patents on a secure legal footing. In other words, if you're going to invent something and get an investor to invest in it, the investor and the inventor can get something back. They're guaranteed to get something back. Now, that's really important if you want to spend time and money and energy and thought in developing new things. And it's little things like that that go into making this secure economic and political development in the 18th century. The interesting thing about the Statute of Ordinances is that it was passed in 1623. In other words, before the Enlightenment, anything like the Enlightenment. So my argument is you see the coming together of these, if you like, bits of a jigsaw in England at the end of the 17th century and then spreading out throughout the rest of Europe after that, and it's that actually that acts as the great, as it were, leap forward, to coin a phrase, rather than Kant or Hume or Gibbon or Diderot or Voltaire or whoever else thinking completely new thoughts. It wasn't that they were irrelevant, it's just that history, if you like, already had a particular momentum.
Well, as a Christian philosopher, how do you view the Enlightenment then?
I think it's an important corrective a lot of the time. It is a very significant period, not least in that you get some extremely intelligent people arguing for social and political goods outside of a theological framework. That's very uncomfortable for many Christians, but in actual fact, what they argued a lot of the time, the kind of things that Christians could have been or should have been arguing. So I think that Christians need to listen to their critics generally, and whether they are historical critics as much as contemporary ones.
Nick Spencer, what should we be listening to now in our culture, in this clash of ideas that characterises the 21st century?
Well, I guess I would say, slightly glibly, people that think differently from us. But I wouldn't target that specifically at Christians. I think one of the challenges we face at the moment, a lot of people recognise this, is that now we have a plethora of different media sources from which we can consume our news, and indeed not just media sources, but obviously Twitter and Facebook and so on and so forth. Studies tend to show that we are more and more likely to listen to and absorb news and views from people who simply agree with us. That generates the kind of echo chamber where we become increasingly incomprehensible to others, and we can't comprehend ourselves how other people can believe such stupid things. Now, that is a dangerous situation, and I think Christians, and indeed all people, should do their best to engage with and listen attentively to people who hold other views. Doesn't mean you have to agree with them at all, but it means that it can help you sharpen and think through your own commitment.
Well, just as a final matter, as the research director of the Theos think tank in London, as an apologist, how does the field of apologetics bring meaning or a sense of greater agency to Christians having arguments, discussions, even just casual barbecue conversations with their neighbours today?
I think it can help you get your ducks in a row, to use a familiar phrase.
I like that.
Christians have lots of beliefs, and sometimes they're all coherent. But if we're honest, a lot of the time they're a bit of a jumble, because that's how beliefs work. That's how human beings are. Apologetics can help you, if you like, go back to the early metaphor, start putting the jigsaw together. So if you get into these conversations over a beer or a barbecue or whatever else, you've got a clearer line of thought.
And for a Christian, and it's about origins. Let's come back full circle. You're an expert in origins, the origins of ideas. But unless you have a sense of the transcendent, then you're operating within a world system that's degenerating to nothing, in which case, at the end, nothing matters.
Yeah, I mean, there are arguments like that, and I have some sympathy with them, but you've got to be careful when you make them, because sometimes non-Christians can hear you say, even if you don't mean it, that their lives are meaningless. And, you know, I hope that Christians wouldn't say that. I think the important point is that if you've got a commitment to fundamental commitment to human beings as something special, as more than just mere animals or more thinking machines, as beings that are due a love and respect, and more importantly, beings that are capable of and indeed completed by giving and receiving that kind of love.
Yes.
That points you in a transcendent direction. I can't see any earthly source, if you like, that can really ground that commitment. That points you towards a God of love.
And that's Nick Spencer, Research Director of the Theos Think Tank in London. Recently here for CPX, Centre for Public Christianity. Those are kind of very similar organisations in their scope and remit. And one of the world's most eloquent apologists. I just love speaking to apologists. I don't know what it is about me. It's good. I enjoy it. It's good. And I think he's right. It does sharpen your pencil to engage with culture when you read apologetics. If you ever get the chance to go to a Christian bookshop or Google the word apologetics, apologists, it's a very good cross-cultural discipline.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.